Sattattana Sutta, 7 cases. This discourse appear in Kandasanyutta, Upayavagga, in connected discourses of the Buddha. At Savatthi, a bhikkhu who is killed in 7 cases and a triple investigator is called in this Dhamma and discipline a consummate one, one who has fully lived the holy life, the highest kind of person. And how bhikkhu is a bhikkhu skilled in 7 cases? Here because a bhikkhu understands form, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation. He understands the gratification, the danger, and escape in the case of form. He understands feeling, perception, volitional formations, consciousness, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation. He understands the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of consciousness. So, regarding the matter, feeling, perception, volitional formation, and consciousness, he would understand 7 cases. First, understand the what is the form, and this arise origin, and the cessation, the gratification, the way leading to the cessation, gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of form. There are 7. So, actually that this is a great knowledge over here, and it's very detailed to analyze. And what bhikkhu is form? The 4 great element and the form derived from the 4 great element, this is called form. With the arising of nutriment, there is the arising of form. With the cessation of nutriment, there is cessation of form. The Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the cessation of form. That is right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Now, let's go through this first one over here, so that we know that matter is that 4 great elements. The 4 great elements are the element of extension, element of heat, element of cohesion, and element of motion. So they are the 4 things. They are inseparable. And whatever thing the derived out of them, they are the sounds and all those things, smell, all those things are the derived qualities. They are the they are made from the 4 great element again. And so that is the form. And whatever the edible food we eat, also the form. We also have the body, that is the form. With the arising of nutriment, there is the arising of form. Now this is the most difficult part to explain. So let's so this one, first we will see the arising phenomena in form in general. That is mentioned in Patisamvida Magga, and that one calls the rise and fall. So how one I cut down it in short, I focus on this particular rise and fall part over here. And basically what it says that when someone sees this materiality as great, and then he sees the characteristic that it's falling as well. And there are 5 characteristics over here. He sees the rise of materiality aggregate in the sense of condition origin. So the origin is condition origin. Thus, with the arising of ignorance, there is the arising of materiality. So there is a one. With the arising of the ignorance, there is arising of materiality. So now you can see that with the ignorance, avidya, paccaya, sankhara. So we get the volitional formations. So when we get the volitional formation, then the consciousness, and then the name and form. So form arise out of that. That's the first one. And the second one, with the arising of craving, there is the arising of materiality. When there is the arising of craving, that is, you can see that we discuss many times this one, that how the form come to arise with the craving. So remember that we discussed that the one seek delight in form, welcomes it, remain holding to it. By doing that one, the delight in form arises. So the delight in form is craving, clinging. As clinging as condition, existence of the very same craving. And existence as condition, there is this birth. With the birth, you can see, we get the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body. That's the only way to get it. So that from the craving, you can see that this is, I say, rising of the materiality. He sees the right, so that we can discuss two things. With the arising of ignorance, there is the arising of materiality. With the arising of craving, there is the arising of materiality. The third one, with the arising of action, karma, there is the arising of materiality. When we have the volitional formation, for example, that is the karma. Because of the karma, there is this consciousness and the form come to arise.
And but that's the same thing, isn't it? That's ignorance again.
Yeah, ignorance is the one step before. From the ignorance, you get the volitional formation, right?
Yes.
So now the ignorance, volitional formations, and then you get the same thing arising. And the other one is the volitional formation, you get the consciousness, so the name and form arising. And with the arising of, he sees the rise of materiality in the sense of conditioned origin. Thus, with the arising of nutriment, there is the arising of materiality. That is the fourth one. We will look at that one in a little bit detail. And the fifth one is, he who sees the characteristic of generation sees the rise of material aggregate. So when the baby is born, then we say that there is this body is there. So we can see that there is this birth. If something arises, materiality come to arise, we say that there is this generation. Having seen the generation, we can say there is a rise of the materiality aggregate. So it's the fourth one that Buddha was mentioning over here. With the arising of nutriment, there is the arising of materiality. But if you see that this materiality, nutriment, lead to all the other ones, like the ignorance and also the craving and the karma, then you straight away see that from the nutriment, if we can show that the nutriment lead to these other three, then we agree, right, that we have this, if the nutriment produces ignorance, for example, from the ignorance, there's this materiality.
So the nutriment is edible food or is some other?
There are four nutriments. The first one is the edible food. So, if we, first one is the edible food, the physical thing that we eat. That the second one, the nutriment, is the contact, sparsha in Pali, contact. That is that we, there is eye, there is form, and eye consciousness come to the eyes. Meeting of the three is called contact. So you can see that edible food that we are talking about is also come to our contact. I see some food. I see a person, right? I see a chicken. Like that, so there is that the edible food also comes to the contact. And depending on this contact, there is this volition. So that is the third nutriment. And the fourth nutriment is the consciousness. The volition, volitional formation, construct the consciousness. So there is this, the fourth one. So now think that there is this physical nutriment, some kind of food for simplicity that in front of us. So with that food, since we have done these things before, we have eaten it before, and we know how to distinguish with the good food and the bad food sort of thing, and normally that there is this perversion, that there is fear in the foul. That's asubha subha in Pali. It's a vipallasa. It is actually that we see that one, we turns away from the truth here. That what is there is the foulness, but we sort of perceive it as fair. What is the foulness? That if you leave the food for 6 days, 7 days on the, you know, sort of a table, you can see how it is smelly and sort of thing, and you can see that dirty things we put into the bin. Those are the ones that when it is visible by that time, it is actually what it is foul, not fair. So when we get this thing, this particular perception, it is not a perception alone that You see, that edible food that I see, when I see, there is a contact. Depending on the contact, I get the feeling as well. And I pursue that feeling. Having pursued that feeling to be pleasurable, well, it is actually suffering, but we actually pursue it as pleasure. And then we have the volition. So, and the consciousness is sort of constructed that time. So, in our construction, now we go back in this path again, that I see this edible food, the nutriment, and then I got the perversion that there is fear in the fowl, and then I get the clinging to sensual desire. I want to eat it. I want to, you know, use it sort of thing. Sometimes saliva is also coming up as well on the spot you see that particular food. And then this leads to the bond of sensual desire. It's called Kama Yoga. The first one Kama Upadana, and then now they have the Kama Yoga. Yoga means that it yoke beings to suffering and do not allow them to escape. So that's why we go to work and we study and we do so many things that we can't escape this cycle. And so that is the bond of sensual desire. And then we get the body tie of covetousness. As Pali is Abhijja Kaya Gantho. It is that we are bound to this one. Like we are binding a book like that. We are bound to this one very strongly. We can't, you know, just undo it. And because of that one, the taint of sensual desire come to arise. It's called Kamasava. And this is sticking towards this basis, you know, that my eye base and all those things. So there's this taint of sensual desire. Now, this one, we are not getting rid of this body tie of covetousness, so the Abhijja Kaya Grantha. Now we have this taint, and this one grows. When it grows, then we get the flood of sensual desire. So it's like that you are in, standing in a house and the flood is coming up. And it becomes more and more, and it leads to the level that it is lifting you up. It's called barb of lust. It is now in the blood level that you can't take it out. I want this and sort of thing very strongly. And by that time, that the consciousness now, that why we are going through this path, there was this edible food. The edible food was the form, right? So my mind would steady, we use that form as the steadying point. It is establishing with that that form, the same thing that leads to this whole phenomena over here. So, and then we go through the bad way through will. We are now happy to go through. When we go through this path, we go into the second path as well. So the nutriment path, the contact as nutriment path. There's no ending over here. Because you start one, then you got the lust generated. And because of the lust, you go into the second one. And then you get the anger as well. We are holding the future thoroughly. Because that whole thing is now really nice. That there is this contact. That let's say you have gone through the first path once. And then you see this food again on a table one day. So it is now there is this contact. The previous occurrence what I had is now playing back. So now I see this one as pleasurable. Whatever thing that fair become pleasurable. So now the pleasurable things, now this is good. Well, everything is good. You know, like that someone would contemplate, I got the job, I got the house, every, you know, I got my children, they are learning and everything is okay. And, you know, my car is working and so I hold the future. So I think that the future is also really good. And this lead to virtue and due to clinging as well, because I want to become better in the future. Right? You hear that someone doing some these meritorious deeds and, you know, by virtue and sort of thing, they be born in the divine realm. Oh, well, I want to be on that plane as well. So, and so that leads to the bond of existence. So Bhava Yoga, and then the body tie of ill will come to arise because that I was thinking that everything is fine, and all of a sudden you know, something pop up from the impermanent nature, tsunami, earthquake, so I lost my job, my car is broken down, so I'm angry about that one. So going through the wrong way, now ill will. So first path we have this lust path, lobha, lust level. And the second one I got the ill will. So where am I? I'm actually going through the wrong eightfold path now. So this one continue to third one. I'm not going to go through all the details here. So we continue to third one, then the mental volition become the nutriment, because that I perceive something, the food as fair, and the fair thing is now pleasurable, the whatever thing is pleasurable, I feel as pleasure, I perceive as pleasure. When I perceive as pleasure, then this volition, chetana, come to my mind because of the perception. And that because of the volition, then I take this one as mine as well. So there are now three things has happened already. And this person going through these views, the views become tight, you know, he is binding to these views. And then this volitional, have the volitional formation, so you get consciousness out of the volitional formation. So now the consciousness becomes the nutriment. When the consciousness becomes the nutriment, now there is this perversion that there is permanence in the impermanent. Because I can construct this consciousness again and again, the way I want. Because I am holding to whatever the food, that those things, and my mind is not going away from that food, that feeling, and it is mine, and I keep on constructing it. The consciousness is constructing it as permanent. So when there is this perversion, that there is permanence in the impermanent, then the attavad upadana, or the self theory clinging, come to arise. And then the bond of ignorance, avicca yoga. And then what is called the body tie of insistence that this is the truth. For him, what is the truth? That it was actually foul nature, but he was taking as fair. So it is, the truth is now fair. And next one, nutriment, as the contact, I get this particular thing is pleasurable rather than suffering. And then third one, it is mine. The fourth one, I am saying it is permanent. So these are the things that I made up from my mind, and they become that this is the truth. All this is false. The permanent impermanency? No, not mine, it's not true. For that person, it is that one. So because of that one, that ignorance come to arise. Avijja. So you can see how the avijja come to arise, or the ignorance come to arise, because of those perversions. The perversion that there is fair in the foul. The perversion that there is pleasure in suffering. That there is the perversion that it is self while it is not self. The perversion that it is permanent while it is impermanent. Those three things, there are perceptions, and there is this thought that when I perceive something as fair, with that perception, whatever the consciousness that comes to arise, that also has got this idea that this is fair. And that is chitta. And then there is, with that mind, with that thought, when I see certain things, I get the view that it is fair. So there are three things happening: the perception, the thought, and the view. So you can see each path tighten them very thoroughly, so that I can't escape out of this one. So you can see by the nutriment, we know where we are in the ignorance. So, if there is ignorance, you can see that there is this arising of form. And in the third path, we were talking about that there is mental volition. If there is volition, that is karma. Because of karma, that's how we come to this ignorance. So, it goes both ways. And the first path, you can see there is craving. That the craving for sensual desire, craving for food, that those things. So you can see that when you explain from this one, it explains all those four.
To me, that it is another way of explaining independent of the origination.
Yes, dependent origination, the first part of the dependent origination and the latter part, so they're combining them together, so then you get the whole dependent origination. Yes. So that one is greater detail, but it's not easy for someone to understand that because that there are 40 Dhamma parts over there, and they are linking this way, linking that way, linking, you know, various ways. And it become difficult, and there is another about 30 Dhamma parts going with that feeling alone. So it's so complicated. So you can see the, with the arising of nutriment, there is the arising of form. With the arising of nutriment, you can see the arising of everything else as well. The ignorance also arising out of that one. The kamma also arising out of that one. So with the cessation of nutriment, there is the cessation of form. So the cessation is that the other way around. If I don't do any of those things, you can see that there is this cessation. So, for example, that if I see that the sensual desire, having that this edible food as a nutriment, you can see that there is this sensual desire come to arise. If I see that this is actually occurring this way and I get the ignorance out of that one, having known that one, I actually reverse the process. If I get rid of the sensual desire, that is thought of renunciation. If I have thought of renunciation, then I don't have this particular problem. So that is the third one. With the cessation of nutriment, there is a cessation of form. The Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the cessation of form. So that is this right view. We start with the right view. Now this person, having understood this rising phenomena and the passing away phenomena, rise and fall, he understand that this is how this thing come to arise. The materiality, the form come to arise because of the nutriment. And this ignorance and everything is their part and parcel in that game. So having understood, then he understand this suffering nature as well. So you can see that why I am struggling, why I am suffering, is because of this craving over here. So he understands the noble truth, the first noble truth, that this the birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, all those things. Having understood the impermanent nature, he understands the suffering nature. Having understood the suffering nature, he knows that how this one come to arise, because he previously contemplated that the arising phenomena is this. The passing away phenomena is this. So, and then he knows the path that naturally, if the craving is the one that creating this one, the sensual desire is the one that actually creating this problem, then I need to get rid of it. So then the thought of renunciation comes. Thought of renunciation for that thought of renunciation of this, this sensual desire. And so the non-harming, non-malevolence, all those things coming, because he understand when he go through this edible food, that path, for example, he understand that all those things, I have these components, I get the, if I go through those path, I get the craving, and I get ill will. The second path lead to ill will, and the third path lead to views. The fourth path, I get the ignorance. So why would I go through those things? So I would reverse the other way around. And so he will now go in a different direction. That is the Eightfold Path, right thought. And then right thought lead to right speech, because the right speech is now supporting my right thought. If I have the wrong speech, for example, then let's say I'm lying, that lying will lead to the lobha, the desires, greediness. So I don't want the greediness because it's not in my path. It is against my path, so I get out of it. So you can see that this Noble Eightfold Path is the way to cessation of this suffering. So now Buddha said, the pleasure and joy that arise in depending on the form. This is the gratification in form. That form is impermanent, suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in form. Removal and abandonment of desire and lust for form. This is the escape from form. So what is this pleasure and joy that arises depending on the form? Buddha explained that one in Mahadukkakkhanda Sutta. So a lot of suttas goes with this. This one is said in very short form, very lengthy. So Buddha now explained that the satisfaction or the gratification in form in Mahadukkakkhanda Sutra. I jump into that relevant part. And what monk is the satisfaction in material shape? Monks, it is like a girl in a noble's family or a Brahman's family or a householder's family who at the age of 15 or 16 is not too tall, not too short, not too thin, not too fat, not too dark, not too fair. Is she monk at the height of her beauty and the loveliness at that time? Yes, Lord. Monk, whatever happiness and pleasure arise because of beauty and loveliness, this is the satisfaction in material shape. So Buddha used a 15-16-year-old girl as the example, and this translation is not really good. That Buddha was actually saying because of the one color that this satisfaction comes. So that is the satisfaction. And then Buddha is talking about the second one. Remember, this is the danger. The form is impermanent, suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in form. So how Buddha explained that one? And over here the word was peril. And what monk is peril in material shape or the danger in material shape? As to these monks, one might see that same lady after time 80 or 90 or 100 years old, age, crooked as a rafter, bent, leaning on a stick, going along palsied, miserable, youth gone, teeth broken, hair thinned, skin wrinkled, stumbling alone, the limbs discolored. What would you think, monk? That which was former beauty and loveliness has vanished, a peril has appeared. So the same person, now 90, 80 years old. So over here also that the color is gone, that's what Buddha is saying. Yes, Lord. This too, monk, is a peril in material shape. And again, monk, one might see that same lady, deceased, suffering, sorely ill, lying in her own excrement, having to be lifted by others, having to be laid down by others. What would you think, monk? That which was former beauty and loveliness has vanished, a peril has appeared. Yes, Lord. This too, monk, is a peril in material shape. And again, monk, one might see that same lady, her body, thrown aside in a cemetery, dead for 1, 2, 3 days, swollen, discolored, decomposing. What would you think, monk? That which was former beauty and loveliness has vanished, a peril has appeared. So Buddha went on that, you know, that that contemplation about the death, that 9 meditation objects. So Buddha went up to that dust level in this one to explain the danger in the form. So that is the danger. And when you are reading these discourses, that you need to have the other material to go with it, otherwise it won't get into the mind. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for form, this is the escape. So whatever, having seen this particular situation, that beautiful girl was now 80 years, 90 years, that, you know, fallen into this level, and having seen that one, so one would naturally give up the desire and lust for that particular form.
The problem with people is that they think, they accept that because of the ignorance. They accept it is the way of life.
Yeah, but that's not knowing this Dhamma. If you know this Dhamma, then you actually repeatedly see, well, this is what it is. Every birth, every time, this is what is happening. Should I be subject to the same pain again and again? So having known that one, that the whatever the beauty or whatever thing, it lasts only very short time. And for that, should I be suffering, you know, for again and again?
Is it correct to say pleasure is also suffering? Did you say?
Well, whatever thing felt is included in the suffering. That's what Buddha said. If you feel something pleasurable, right, then you can see in this immediate example over here that the same person going to 80 years, 90 years, that the pleasure that you had before is no longer there.
If correct that the Buddha said watching someone try to extract pleasure from the world is like watching a baby trying to lick honey off a sharp knife? Was that something he said?
Or? No. So, that people accept that one because of the ignorance, not knowing this thing.
You can apply Magandhi Sutta. Yeah.
Magandhi Sutta. Yeah, so that about that lady, yes.
Yeah, like, you know how, like, you know, some guy with, like, some disease in himself, but, like, he's, like, you know, making it better by, like, you know, putting some hot thing on himself, but that's because he's suffering, but he thinks it's pleasure, and he's doing that.
Yeah, so he's thinking that it is pleasurable to that one. That is actually, he tried to get rid of the pain. That's what
the perception, like, it's the wrong perception, it's the pain, the fell.
No, pain is pain. That pain is that the whenever the pleasure ceases, you get the pain. So, the fair and the foul is different. Foul, is that what you're asking?
I was thinking, like, whether you could apply that sort to the Magandhi Sutra. I think, like, you know, how Buddha's, like, you know, some guy who don't have that disease anymore, he doesn't do the same process anymore because you know, it's not pleasure now. I don't know if I'm explaining.
I think what he's talking about is wrong perception. When someone has got leprosy, they don't feel much, so they get the hot charcoal and put it on the skin.
Yeah,
but because they don't feel it, they think that they are curing their wounds, but actually they are not curing their wounds. But once they are cured, then they won't do it again because they will have the right perception.
Right perception, that's different, yeah. But that one applying over here means in what sense we are talking about, the applying that phenomena over here is different. I think it need a different...
No, not at this stage, but like before, I think.
Before when you are explaining that's applicable over there, yeah. So, whatever ascetics and Brahmins having thus directly known form, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, having thus directly known the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of form, are practicing for the purpose revulsion towards form, for its fading away and cessation. They are practicing well. Those who are practicing well have gained foothold in this Dhamma and discipline. They really understood this one. See, the understanding, that particular part over here is very huge. The understanding, the nutriment. Nutriment create this, the lust, the anger, and then the views, the identity view and the views, other views, and also the ignorance. It has quite a lot to do with that one. So, if someone understands that one, this particular form that I have is depending on this nutriment alone, and how I can get rid of this one, escape, they know quite a lot. And they are practicing well and they got the foothold in thus Dhamma and discipline. And whatever ascetics and Brahmins, having thus directly known form, its origin is cessation and the way leading to cessation, having thus directly known the gratification, the danger and escape in the case of form, through revulsion towards form, through its fading away and cessation, are liberated by non-clinging. They are well liberated. Those who are well liberated are consummate ones. As to those consummate ones, there is no round for describing them. There's no round up for describing them means that they become an arahant just by understanding that form, that in this manner. If someone understands this one thoroughly, then he understands the nutriment, and we understand nutriment, then they understand whole Dhamma. Because they understand with the nutriment, they understand the ignorance, how the ignorance come to arise, and the cessation of ignorance. So when they understand it, they become arahants. They destroy this the dependent origination. They are not part of dependent origination anymore. So if there is no dependent origination, then you can't describe that one. This particular one is such and such in the sense that this person from here they will be born in the other world. There's no such a thing. There's no dependent origination for that person. So there's no clinging. There's no existence. Since there is no existence, there's no birth. So what is the round that he can be described? So that's the end of this thing, samsara. And then Buddha went to what bhikkhu is feeling. There are these six classes of feeling. Feeling born of eye contact. Feeling born of mind contact. This is called feeling. So eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and the mind contact. This is called feeling. With the arising of contact, there is arising of feeling. With the cessation of contact, there is cessation of feeling. The Noble Eightfold Path is the religion cessation. That is from right view to right concentration. So, the feeling Buddha described in using eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. There are six classes of this feeling. So, how do we get the feeling? That is the contact. What is this contact? Now, in the previous example also, you were talking about there is this particular edible food, for example. Having seen that one from my eye, so there is this form, edible food is the form, that there is this eye. So, eye consciousness come to your eyes. The meeting of the three is called the contact. It's very important to understand. It is not the food, it is not the eye, it is not the eye consciousness. The meeting of the three is the contact. So I have actually taken this example before as well. If that food vanishes over there, still my contact, I can reproduce that one. I can, if it is giving me pleasure, I can go back to that one. Remember, I was taking a person that is coming in front of you, that beautiful person. But that person is passing away, I will call for something. But the one that I got is not having any cough. That person might die, but this one that I have, this contact, is there. So that's why we get into this. This is mine and this is permanent. It's keep coming back to the same contact. That's our nature of our mind, whenever it is pleasurable. It can come back to the same point again and again.
That is what the karma comes then.
Karma part.
Yeah, because yes. Every action has gone.
Yes.
Now, but still we are holding that.
Because we hold the we have the perception that this is pleasurable.
Yeah.
So if it is pleasurable, then I get the volition. What the volition does, it is actually clinging to that particular thing. So that since the volition is clinging and using it again and again, so the consciousness that arises depending on that one, I can keep on constructing it. So it becomes permanent.
So if again my eye sees a form, eye consciousness arises because the eye meets the form, then the eye consciousness, the eye and the form are all contact. So the form can disappear, the eye can disappear, I could lose my eyes, but yep. The contact continues. The eye consciousness continues, or the eye consciousness can disappear as well in the context?
Consciousness disappears as well. But out of the contact, you get three things. What do you get? You get the feeling. And that same feeling you pursue from your perception that this is pleasurable. This is good. This is pleasurable. Oh, it is displeasure or pleasure. Or neutral. And with that one, that this now this perception to something that because I perceive as pleasure, then I have the volition. The volition is chetana in Pali. The volition is holding to that thing. It's going back to the contact. So, because the volition is there, now I have put the karma form. Karma part is done now. Now this one, you know, reproduce the consciousness. Volition, remember, volitional formations. Construct condition form as form. Condition feeling as feeling. What is that condition thing? That was the contact that actually occurring. So it is that contact that I got is different to the contact somebody else got. I saw that particular person or food as really tasteful or pleasurable and sort of thing. Another person said, disgusting, I'm not going to eat that one. Right? So it's got displeasure. So there's condition things we are keep on constructing. The way we have perceived and, apprehended before. We have gone through that path before. You know, think about two kind of food. That one that you like and you eat, the other one you don't eat. Since I have gone through one path before, now I get this thing back, it producing the pleasure.
So the pleasure is after the contact?
Or the pleasure is coming after the contact, yes. Depending on the contact, I got the pleasure. Depending on the contact, you get the perception and the volition also there.
So depending on the consciousness, so say moldy cheese, I like moldy cheese, some people think moldy cheese is disgusting, those funny blue ones, so I look at it, there's a contact from the eye, the cheese, eye consciousness, there's a contact with the moldy cheese, and the eye consciousness includes my memory of other moldy cheese that was the same, which I like.
Yeah, why you are saying that the moldy cheese is that I like? How do you know? How do you know? Because you have eaten before.
Yeah.
You have eaten before. Remember, whenever we say this pleasurable, displeasure, all those things, you have done it before. So you are actually constructing it. Because of your habitual tendency. My habit, when I see this sort of thing, well, I go this way. If you see excrement, I reject it, right? So that's my habit. Arahants don't have that one. They can actually pursue the foul thing as fair thing as foul. They are free. We always go into our practice.
That's a good point, actually, because, we construct, already construct a certain thing, and then again we construct it.
That is called sankatanga bisankaranti.
Yeah, that's right.
It constructs condition form as form. Condition feeling as feeling. That's how Buddha explained the volitional formation.
Yeah, that's the point.
Keep on constructing.
So volition is sanskara or?
Volition is sanskara, yes. You can take it as according to Abhidhamma standpoint, that volition is sanskara, sanskara is volition. Is no distinction is made. So, because this, when you say sanskara, it has got other things as well. They not only volition is the main one, but other feeling like cravings and the anger, all those things can be there as well. Mm-hmm. So, according to Abhidhamma, there are 52 mental states that is included in volitional formation. 52. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not 52, 50 mental states, excluding the feeling and the perception. So, but you can get the volition as the major thing. It is like the monitor in the class who would coordinate the effect of all the others. And he got his own. And the mind is actually taking it from the volition. So, so volition is the main thing.
So when somebody dies, you carry it to the next birth. Whatever the habit.
Yes. So there are two parts here. There is this something called Kamma Bhava and the Upaprapti Bhava. It is the Kamma Bhava we are talking about, that the volition part. The what you are talking about is the Upaprapti Bhava. That is that they arise that if you look at the dependent origination, bottom part of the dependent origination, where there is this contact, then depending on the contact, there is feeling. Depending on the feeling that there is this craving, depending on the craving, that clinging as condition, there is existence. So that is called, that existence is also the bhava. That bhava is called upaprapti bhava. It is like that the holding, it's somebody is announcing, hoppers and hoppers, then I'm saying that it is mine, I'm holding it and I'm going in that direction. So, what we were talking about is that the top part of the dependent origination, that is ignorance, depending on the ignorance, there is this sanskara, vijapachya sankara, that part. So, because whenever you have this existence, either way, it leads to the other birth. So now we discuss about the feeling, and the Eightfold Path is the way leading to cessation of feeling. And then Buddha said that the pleasure and joy that arise in depending on the feeling. So we cover four parts, that the feeling, what is feeling, there's six classes of feeling, and there is this arising phenomena, and then the past, the cessation part, origin and the cessation, and the way leading to the cessation. And again you can see the eightfold path over there, and having known that this is suffering, and then one would actually give up. I don't want the sensual desire feelings. I remember that discourse that we discussed, the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, that there is this householders, there are three kind of flesh, and in the renunciation there are three kind of flesh. So I replace this one with the good ones, and then I go to the cessation of that one. So that is the right thought. Right thought is coming very heavily over here. And then Buddha said the pleasure and joy that arise in depending on feeling, this is the gratification in feeling. That feeling is impermanent, suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in feeling. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for feeling, this is the escape from feeling. But do we know what the pleasure, the gratification in feeling? The Buddha said pleasure and joy that arise depending on feeling. Well, again, this one is that Mahadukkakkhanda Sutta, that Buddha explained that what is the satisfaction in feeling. And what monk is the satisfaction of feeling? As to this monk, a monk aloof from pleasures of the senses, aloof from unskilled state of mind, enters into and abides in the first meditation, which is accompanied by initial thought and discursive thought, is born of aloofness and is rapturous and joyful. Monk at that time, in which the monk aloof from pleasures and of the senses, aloof from unskilled state of the mind, when he abides in the first meditation, if at that time he does not strive for his own hurt, so he is in the first jhana concentration, and if he is not strive for his own hurt, how do we hurt ourselves in the first jhana? Let's say I am meditating, I am in the first jhana, and then I am happy with this rapture, and my stomach is grumbling, and I want to eat, and my body is tired, right? But I can actually keep on going in the meditation for a long, long time. If he does not strive for hurt for others, so others may be waiting as well, right? So I'm actually keep on doing my meditation. If he does not strive for hurt of both, at the very time, he experiences a feeling that is not hurtful. So it is, I'm not harming myself, I'm not harming anybody else's, I'm not harming both. At that time, he experiences a feeling that is not hurtful. I must say that not hurtfulness is the highest satisfaction among the feeling. That is the highest satisfaction. And then Buddha said that the second jhana concentration, third jhana concentration, fourth jhana concentration. So at that same thing repeated, that if he is not hurting anybody at that level, that is the highest satisfaction among the feeling. We do not know what the satisfaction in feeling is, isn't it? It is that level. And what monk is the peril of feeling? In as much monk as feeling are impermanent, ill, liable to change, this is the peril of feeling. That is the danger. So, and then Buddha said that...
Buddha was saying that now we got for ordinary person who is not meditating and who has some sort of feeling out of contact. And we are talking about person who is meditating, and so how we compare those two together? One
person is not meditating, the other person is meditating.
Yeah,
so that the meditation person got the satisfaction in feeling. The other one also got some sort of pleasure, because remember that Buddha took that person as a 15-16-year-old girl, having seen that particular person, because of the color, one gets some sort of a feeling because of the contact. So that is his satisfaction over there, right? But that satisfaction is nothing compared to the satisfaction of the meditating person. He was the great one. So, and not only that, he's actually got that feeling. Now he's not hurting anybody either with that. So that is the highest one. So everyone gets some sort of satisfaction from the feeling. So Buddha is saying that's the best feeling over there. And actually, not having a feeling is the best. The cessation of feeling, so the ending of this. And then the removal and abandonment of desire and lust for feeling, this is the escape from feeling. Whatever ascetics and Brahmin, having thus directly known feeling, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, Having thus directly known the gratification, the danger and escape in the case of feeling, are practicing for the purpose of revulsion. We want to get rid of these feelings for its fading away and cessation. They are practicing well. Those who are practicing well have gained a foothold in wisdom and discipline. And whatever ascetics and Brahmins having thus directly known feeling, escape in the case of feeling, as to those consummate ones, there is no round for describing them, because they become an arahant as well. If you know the feeling correctly, then there's nothing to be, there's no round for describing. And then Buddha now says, and what bhikkhu is perception? There are these six classes of perception. Perception of forms, perception of mental phenomena. So the forms, the sounds, and then the smell, then the taste, and the tangible object, and then the mental phenomena. Remember that when we are talking of feeling, feeling born of eye contact, ear contact. So it is something to do with eye, ear, nose, tongue, body. When you are talking about the perception, it is external. All of them are external. See, Buddha did not say perception of the eye, the feeling of the eye, the perception of form, sounds, all external. And then the only the mental part is the phenomena, is the internal perception.
But both are generated out of
contact. Yeah. This is called perception. With the arising of contact, there is the arising of perception. That's the answer. With the cessation of contact, there is the cessation of perception. This noble eightfold path is the way leading to the cessation of perception. That is right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And the pleasure and joy that arise independent of the perception. This is the gratification in perception. The perception is impermanent, suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in perception. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for perception. This is the escape from perception. So Buddha said the pleasure and joy that arise independent of perception. We know that when we see certain colors, for example, from the perception we perceive this is red, this is blue, and sort of thing, we say beautiful and so on, we get the feeling, we have perception. But if you look at Pottapada Sutta in Digha Nikaya, long length saying, then you can see that what Buddha meant over here. I will just quote one line over there. So over there Buddha said that the one attained the first jhana concentration, having attained the first jhana concentration, at that time there is present a true but subtle perception of delight and happiness. That same feeling he perceived, and he is truly feel it, truly perceive it. This word was used all the time. He is present a true but subtle perception. And so you can see that is the satisfaction, and there is no other discourse that actually saying this one, that this is what I meant. But if you read that one, you can understand what Buddha meant over here. So, and Buddha went that one up to the seventh jhana. You know, the first jhana has this perception. And then the up to the seventh jhana, that is plane of nothing. There is no thing. So then he got the perception that there is nothing, no thing. And then beyond that one, and then cessation of perception. The cessation of feeling and perception, the Nirodha Samapatti, even to that level in Pottapada Sutta. So that is the highest one can actually get, not having that. And so the whatever the perception that we have, including that the cessation of feeling and perception, they are impermanent. Suffering and subject to change, this is the danger in perception. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for perception, this is the escape from perception. And then again Buddha repeated whatever ascetics and Brahmins, then when they understand this, that there is no round for describing, then if they understand perception, they understand this, the nutriment, then the ignorance, you know, the perception. Remember we talk about the perception is the one creating this problem in the first place. The perception of the fairness while it is foul, perception of pleasure while it is suffering or displeasure, and perception of self while it is not self, perception of permanency while it is impermanent. So that is leading to the ignorance. And then Buddha explain the volitional formation. And what bhikkhu are volitional formation? There are these six classes of volition. Volition regarding forms. Volition regarding mental phenomena. And this is called volitional formation. Regarding the forms, sounds, smell, taste, all those things. All those external ones. Now you can see that the connection between the perception and the volition as well, in a sense. The perception perceives the form, external. The sound, external. And the volition regarding form, the sound, external. So the perception and volition goes together in that way. And
externally, can the perception and the volition be regarding internal as well if one considers about his thoughts?
Internal. One is only the mind part. Yeah. And so the Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the cessation of volitional formations. That is right due to right concentration. And again, Buddha said the pleasure and joy that arise independent of volitional formation, don't we? We have this volitional formation, various kinds, isn't it? In the mundane life, that one would, you know, I learn, I studied, I passed this degree, I'm now working, I'm getting money, all those things, you know. I'm eating these kind of things, food that I want, so various kinds. And real ones are actually, they are mundane ones, real ones are in, you go into the concentration, jhana concentration, and then those concentration, whatever thing it is producing is great, and then you go to the cessation level as well. No perception or feeling come to arise. So they are the highest ones.
So volitional formations are the same as wanting? Like
volition.
Volition.
Buddha just said it. See there, Buddha said, what are the volitional formations? There are these six classes of volition. So these six classes of volition is called volitional formation.
So the volition regarding forms is wanting forms, or that's not quite the same thing?
Well, volition has got that wanting part. Remember, if I describe it the way Petakopadesa says, I have to say it in Pali first. Itipi kamesu samyutto viharati bhavito ajo sanya ayam chetana. Ajo sanya means that, so kamesu is the sensual desires. And we are connected with it. For example, if you take a food, I am connected with that food. If I have food and excrement here, that I know that excrement, no, I'm not eating. The food, this over here, I eat. So I'm connected. Bhavito, that means that I'm using it. And I'm remain holding to it. So the wanting is that I am remaining holding to it. So guys, so whenever say volition, you can actually think what is inside it is the craving that strongly holding. So there is this pleasure and joy that arise independent of volition formation. This is the gratification volition. That volitional formations are impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. So whatever thing I have, you can see it is changing. A carpenter would construct a roof, or fallen. Engineer would construct a bridge. Remember that bridge that was fallen. So that is his construction. It's impermanent. And we construct this blood body, and the body itself kill us one day. Remember? So you can see that it is the end of this body. So our volitional formation to have this body, and it is impermanent. And so since it is impermanent, it is suffering, and it is subject to change. So this is the danger in volitional formation. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for volitional formation, this is the escape from volitional formation. And again, Buddha said that if someone understands that one, then there is no room for describing that person either. What we call is consciousness. There are these six classes of consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. So that is now eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. This is called consciousness. With the arising of name and form, there is the arising of consciousness. So we know about the name, that is this the mental part, the contact, the feeling, perception, the volition, and then the attention. And there is this, the form is the materiality we discuss. With the cessation of name and form, there is a cessation of consciousness. The Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the cessation of consciousness, so the right view to right concentration. The pleasure and joy that arise depending on consciousness. This is the gratification in consciousness. And that consciousness is impermanent, suffering and subject to change. This is the danger in consciousness. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for consciousness. This is the escape from consciousness. And then Buddha again repeated the statement, whatever asceticks and Brahmins, having thus directly known consciousness, its origin, its cessation, and way leading to the cessation. So, and there's no room for describing them. So the consciousness, you can see, that is the fourth path in that nutriment we are talking about. And it is in such a way, bhikkhu, that bhikkhu is killed in seven cases. And even if someone understand one part, right, that person become an arahant regarding that materiality alone.
Now, five aggregates, and it is explaining here, if someone gets out of one of them, he is going to be in that too. I thought that is we need to get rid of all five.
Well, when you understand the one of them. Remember, we were talking about the material one, we were analyzing heavily. So what you understand in the materiality one, you can see that regarding the nutriment, then you actually go through the feeling. You understand that feeling part, and then you understand how the materiality come to arise out of that one. So you understood the matter, you understood feeling, you understood the perception, the volition, and the consciousness.
Okay.
All five was understood from first one. It is that detail. And so, these are the seven cases. And how bhikkhu is a bhikkhu, a triple investigator? Here, bhikkhu investigate by way of the elements, by way of sense basis, and by way of dependent origination. It's a very important one over here as well. It is in such a way that bhikkhu is a triple investigator. So, what is this, how do we analyze that by way of elements? There is this nice discourse in Samyutta Nikaya, connected discourses of the Buddha. It's called Pena Pindupama Sutta. Pena, you know, the lump of form. I will just go for one paragraph of that one. And Buddha was dwelling in a bank of the river, and then Buddha addressed the bhikkhus, you know, the, nearby the river. Because suppose that this river Gangas were carrying along a great lump of form. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void. In the lump of form, you don't see anything. So appear to him void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a lump of form? There cannot be anything. So too, bhikkhu, whatever kind of form there is, whatever past, future, present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in form? So Buddha, I'm not going to go through the whole discourse.
What does it mean, the void?
Void, yes, there's nothing, it's empty, emptiness, anatta. Emptiness and leading to this anatta. So, now the Petakopadesa sort of describe this one. So, in the lump of form, what we abstract from out of that one is that the void, hollow, insubstantial, those three words. In a form, that is what it is. So, Buddha said, the Petakopadesa explained that there are 18 elements. What are the 18 elements? We got eye element, the form element, eye consciousness element. We got the ear element, the sound element, and then the ear consciousness element. So, like that one, we got 18 elements, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and the body. So, how do we see these 18 elements? We should see that one as impermanent, void, and suffering. The same way that we saw that the lump of form is void, that hollow and there is nothing in it. Likewise, we should see that in the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, that these elements, there is nothing. The meaning to be understood as a component. Then when we think about elements, we need to think about this component. This is as a component. Now what is this? Eye's clarity or the sensitivity. Eye sensitivity is the eye element. Ear sensitivity is the ear element. So we are thinking in terms of the sensitivity. Then and we see that this is impermanent, void and suffering, as in that Penibindupam Sutta, that these things are empty. And then when we talk about the basis, so you can see that when we talk about the elements, we actually thinking about the contact. You don't get the eye sensitivity unless there is a contact, right? So when we talk about the basis, we have eye base, ear base, nose base, tongue base, mind base, and there are 12, that the form base and then the idea base. So again we see them as impermanent, void and suffering. Remember that we discussed this one little bit in the Four Vipers discourse as an empty village and the basis to be understood as the empty village. How it is empty? You can see as far as that my mind is not holding to a form, when I am not seeking delight in that form, my eye is empty. As far as I am not welcoming that particular form, that my eye is empty. As far as I am not remain holding to the form, my eye is empty. Nabinandati, nabivadati, najosayatittati, that those terms. So that's the way to understand this basis. And then the dependent origination, paticchasamuppada, depending on this one, you can see the Buddha explained that one in many places over here, how the feeling come to arise depending on the contact. The perception come to arise depending on the contact, the volition come to arise depending on the contact, and so on. And the name and form, depending on the name and form, the consciousness come to arise. So the dependent origination is there. So now Buddha is putting all those things in three terms. That is, in terms of, one should investigate by way of elements, sense bases, and the dependent origination. And it in such a way that a bhikkhu is a triple investigator. A bhikkhu who is skilled in these seven cases and a triple investigator is called in this dhamma and discipline a consummate one who has fully lived the holy life, the highest kind of person, an arahant. So it's a great discourse, very lengthy. And that nutriment part lead to a great understanding of the discourse. Okay, we'll stop for today.